Right now, it is time for Jill Goodman and the adventure continues here at Robin Hood Radio.
It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. We have questions. Do you have answers?
I sure hope I do.
Well, so far you have never, never let us down.
Oh, I don't know about that. There are some questions that I don't have answers for. I will tell you that. But I'll try my best, and it's another gorgeous day. Talking about the weather, I can't believe that there's going to be snow anywhere.
Yeah, and I think that's just some sort of distorted fantasy. But, you know,
I think Marshall just likes to talk about it.
Marshall likes to put the thing...
Well, no, it's there for... It's probably going to happen to people to the north and to the west of us. But because it's a clipper, and this time of year, it all depends when it comes... Like, if it comes by in the middle of the night, the temperatures are around 30 degrees or 35 degrees.
We might get some snow.
But it's not going to be anything. It's just that the mention, even to have the mention of snow in the forecast.
Okay.
So it's just sort of menacing us from afar. That's the other thing. Something to really look forward to 4 days from now, as if today isn't entertaining enough. Morgan in Saugerties. Dun, da, da, da. My baby basset hound, 6 months, is an unstoppable eating machine and has managed to chow down on a whole series of not good for doggos items. Her most recent was a corn cob out of the trash, and then she didn't poop for 24 hours. Can you please talk about intestinal blockage? How common is it really? How long is it okay to wait before you go to the vet? And can I just say that with the blind spaniel, who was just the disabled spaniel when she first came, your daughter caught someone trying to eat a stick, and she said, "Baby's first intestinal blockage." It was really cute.
My daughters know a lot about intestinal blockages in dogs.
Yeah.
It is, unfortunately, it's a more common problem than any of us would like it to be, especially in younger dogs. Sometimes in cats as well, but cats have less of a tendency to eat things that, you know, they don't chew on things for fun, usually, except for sometimes some thread with a needle on the end of it or something crazy like that. But it is not an uncommon problem to have a blockage with puppies who put everything in their mouth, and if it goes down the throat, then depending on how big it is, it can cause a blockage in the outflow tract of the stomach called the pylorus, which is funnel-shaped, and depending on how large the item is, it can get lodged in the pylorus. Oftentimes, they'll eat cloth-type items, and the cloth just kind of, like eating spaghetti, it just kind of keeps going down the throat, and then as it leaves the stomach, the intestine, it can act in a linear way to bunch up the intestines. So some of it might get stuck in the stomach, and then the intestines are still moving, and they bunch right up an accordion onto the cloth, and or rope toy, rubber band, or a piece of rope, or
squirrel,
you know, a stuffed animal, all those types of things. And you know, it can become a surgical problem. And it can happen very quickly, actually. So it's not a good idea to wait. So if you suspect that, you know, your dog has been chewing on this toy and all of a sudden the toy is missing and your dog's not eating, then not waiting is a good idea. So, you know, the next day you should be taking your dog to the vet. If there's vomiting, absolutely the next day. And typically we'll do radiographs trying to see what the intestines and the stomach look like, whether there are signs of a blockage, which can be sort of stacking of the bowel loops with gas in them. But typically you will have repeated vomiting, because if you've got a complete blockage, there's no place for all the stomach fluids and stomach juices to go when they come back up, even if your dog's not eating.
So you're going to, but the thing is, you're going to observe something amiss, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So if your puppy, you know, an eating machine like that may go ahead and continue to eat, but it's going to start coming back up.
One way or the other, right.
One way or the other. Now, there can be things that will move all the way through the intestines and slow everything down and irritate the heck out of the intestine, but it's not something that you want to play around with because they can get so sick, and the intestine can get strangulated and can die, portions of the intestine, over a 24 to 48-hour period. So it is definitely something to have checked out soon when you start to see the symptoms.
And what about a corn? What about a corn cob and the dog didn't poop?
Corn cobs are. I can't tell you how many corn cobs I've pulled out of dogs' intestines. Corn cobs are a big culprit, and I don't know why they eat them whole, but they. I think it's because they're getting into something and they're looking around, waiting for mom or dad to come and catch them. And they
right. I think that that's absolutely what it is. Like, oh, well, also, it's, you know, depends on the size of the corn cob. There are all sorts of.
It does. You know, they will try to you know, if they think someone's going to take something away, they're going to swallow it whole. So you have to be careful with that, too. My dog, once out in the middle of the yard, I can remember, had a dead bird, good-sized bird, throwing it up in the air and having a wonderful time with it. And I gave her a stern comment and then started to make my way toward her, and she threw it up in the air, caught it with her mouth, and swallowed it whole. She didn't want me taking that bird from her. She didn't get blocked, but...
Right. No, there's literally always something. All right, so the questions, how common is it really? Very common. How long is it okay to wait before you go to the vet? I don't even know how to answer that.
Well, you know, you can, if your dog starts not feeling well that night, then definitely call first thing in the morning. If you have a young puppy who's vomiting and, you know, vomiting 8 to 10 times.
Quick, do that.
Then you need to go to the emergency clinic if it's overnight.
Right. And then if your baby fasts at home to 6 months and eats a corn cob, I guess you can give her what? I guess Morgan did. It came out.
Yeah, that's great. But they're really not digestible. So you have to have a good sized digestive tract to pass a piece of corn cob.
So this is so at least the unstoppable eating machine seems to be able to move things through. All right. TJ in Albany. I was spring cleaning some old paper files today, and to my surprise, I came across a big old mouse nest in the bottom of the box. Now I'm kind of freaking out that I breathed. in hantavirus. I didn't see any droppings, just nesting material, but I don't know if it's the droppings that matter. TJ, please don't come to my house.
I can't speak to the human infection with hantavirus, but my understanding is it is carried in the stool, and when the stool's dry, that it's aerosolized and breathed in. I don't have any idea how common it is or how easy it is to get, so that would be a question for another doctor.
Okay, it's not a veterinarian. Okie dokie, we will move on to Lily in New Britain. Hi there, earthy, crunchy, hippie herbalist here. My kitty Marco Polo fell off the fridge at an awkward angle and strained one of his hind legs. It wasn't bad enough to go to the vet, but I could see he was hurting. My comment later. I had some tincture of Solomon's seal for my own tendinitis, so I gave him a dropper full in his next couple of meals. It did seem to help. But is Solomon's seal safe for cats? And is the alcohol in tincture an issue? It's not a lot, but then again, Marco is a little guy. This is why I'm not a veterinarian, and you are.
You have to be careful with herbs. You can't assume that they're going to be okay for cats and dogs. Many of them are fine, but I'm not positive about the Solomon's seal, but it is, I believe it's in the lily family, because it looks like kind of lily of the valley. And so the lily family can be really toxic to cats, so I wouldn't use Solomon's seal in a cat. My understanding is used for, you can use it as an anti-inflammatory, and I thought specifically for lung problems, but it is something that I am not familiar with using in cats, and cats who chew on lilies can get really sick and go into kidney failure, so I wouldn't use Solomon's seal with a cat.
All right, and now I'm going to just interject because here's the tough thing. Somebody once gave me the great cat cookbook, you know, cook for your cat. And I once showed a friend who was a vet the recipes, and the friend who was a vet looked at the recipes and said, you know, basically, this is a menace to the life and health of a cat and their nutrition. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were perfectly nice recipes for humans, but and very, very healthy, just not necessarily workable.
For a carnivore.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that there's a ton of so in this question, it wasn't bad enough to go to the vet. I always wonder, if it isn't bad enough to go to the vet, that means you're thinking about it. How do we know that it isn't bad enough to go to the vet? And then if you really don't know how the little carnivore is going to behave with something, you know, I'm just curious why you would isn't it harder to unrisk? I totally understand the anthropomorphization, and you know, it's like, hey, it worked on my tendonitis, therefore it should work on Marco Polo's. I totally get that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if people should have a built-in filter or just like a little off switch. It's like, wait a second, this is not a human. This is not a baby human interior.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think that's a good point because they are different creatures, and they can have, for instance, people chew gum with xylitol every day, and xylitol is super toxic to dogs. So it's the little things that make a big difference between life and death. And you can't assume either that, if you're using something that appears to be working, you know, you don't know whether your cat, if your cat wasn't bad enough to go to the vet, probably was getting better anyway.
Right.
So you don't know whether it was helping. And then I think the other part of this was the alcohol tincture. Cats, usually if there's a tincture made with alcohol, they will do a lot of drooling. I'm surprised that he would eat it at all. Just throwing that out there. Glycerin is what we usually use for cats with tinctures.
Yeah. Okay. All right, David Newberg, I got this pack digestible rawhide chews. So far, they do seem more digestible for my dogs, but my question is about the label. There's an asterisk on digestible, and what it says is, quote, based on in vitro digestibility. You're a vet, so do you know what the heck that means? Personally, it gives me the creeps.
So in vitro just means that it's not tested inside the body. It's tested either in a test tube or a Petri dish, so in the lab. And so likely what they're doing is adding digestive enzymes or bacteria to the rawhide chews to see if they'll break down. And so it's not a great comparison in vitro and in vivo, meaning in the live form. as far as digestibility goes, I think I don't see how you can really recreate the stomach environment. But in any case, I think that, you know, the digestible rawhide, I'm not sure what that means. I think that they're sort of chewing up or breaking up the rawhide and putting it back together.
Yeah, do you remember there used to be this composite? I don't know if there still is, by the way, but long, long, long ago, there used to be the rawhides themselves, which were twisted. Yeah, I mean, and then there were rawhide composites, which were made of the same. It was broken up rawhide that was
crushed.
Yeah,
right.
And so, I never ended up. It always ended up being somewhat pointless because like one good golden retriever tooth, and that was like.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Number one, how do they get it to stick together? And that I don't know.
Right.
And number two, is it? It's still probably not very digestible. However, it'll pass through. So there are lots of dogs who
thrive,
who can eat, who can eat anything like that. And as long as it's broken up into small bits, it'll pass fine. And I do give my dogs rawhide bones, the wholesome hide, one sheet of rawhide, large sheet. They're called retriever rolls. But I never give them when I'm not sitting there watching them.
Right, and I think that's always just been a policy. If you do dole it out, then you gotta hang out with them.
Yeah, because you don't want them swallowing a big piece.
Yeah, going back to question one.
The idea is to get them to chew.
Right.
Not to swallow.
Chew, drat you, chew. All right. My mini border collie is severely allergic to pretty much every medication in the book. She gets a skin reaction and can't stop scratching and licking whenever she's on one of those hardcore meds. I had her on Frontline, but I had to stop because of this issue. All winter, she's been doing great because she's not on anything other than heartworm meds. So what kind of flea and tick prevention can I use this year? Also, do flea collars work? If they do work, how? I've never understood how a small circle around an animal's neck could really keep fleas off. And then there's ticks. Help, please. Erin in Hartford.
So a few components here. There's the border collies, collie breeds. It's possible that your dog has more of a sensitivity genetically to drugs. So I'm not really sure what hardcore meds means. Is this just, you know, does this mean just the flea and tick products, or is this lots of medications? I'm not sure about that from the question. But in any case, so, you know, when you're getting an itch reaction, it means that your dog's hypersensitive to something. And there is very little way to predict what they're going to be hypersensitive to. And so
let's pretend that this hardcore, let's just say it's the whole range of existing flea and tick, whatever the
Yeah, so there are topical products that could irritate the skin. There are oral products that, if your dog's having a hypersensitivity to any medication, like antibiotics and so forth, that they're given, then, you know, you put that oral product in, and it's going to be potentially in the skin for a month. So, you know, your dog may be scratching and licking for a month if they're sensitive to that. So I guess I would be careful about that. A Seresto collar is something that you can take off. So a Seresto collar may be what I would use, because you can remove it. If it's been on for a week, then it's going to take another week for it to get out of their system. But it is something that you'll be able to deal with, at least. The alternative would be to use something with neem oil in it, like the Tick Hex. And that specifically, I think, is for ticks. It's a quote-unquote natural product, but it has neem oil, N-E-E-M, which is good for repelling ticks. It's good for spraying the yard as well. But, you know, there's no there's an absolute possibility that your dog could also be allergic to neem oil. So all I can say is trying various products that one at a time.
There's something really interesting in here to me, and that is her heartworm meds does not seem to have a problem with heartworm meds.
She's talking about a summer right. Winter okay in the winter. So I'm assuming that we're applying flea products and flea and tick products in the summertime.
Right.
And the complicating factor is here that most dogs who have allergic itch are itchy in the spring, summer, fall. So maybe that has something to do with it. You know, has there been kind of a study done here? Is this something that these observations, are they definitely correlated to specific medications? Or is your dog on a medication for a week and then all of a sudden starts to itch, maybe for another reason? So it is a complicated factor, a complicated problem. You really have to factor in what is the risk of having a tick-borne disease and can you live with fleas. And so keeping your dog out of other people's homes and playing with other dogs is a way to help prevent fleas. They're not going to pick up fleas outdoors. It would be pretty unusual unless they're rolling in a dead animal. If you've got cats in the house and they go outside, you know, if they're going to be communing with other cats, they may pick up fleas. So, you know, it's sort of a life of isolation if you can't use any of the flea and tick medications unless you're unless you're willing to live with fleas and the potential of tick-borne disease.
And how does that flea, just out of curiosity, how does that flea collar work? Does it?
Well, flea collars don't work that well.
Yeah, okay.
The Seresto collar works because it's putting out the chemical onto the dog's skin, and it is spreading through the skin.
Right. No, and the thing with the old flea collars, that was just basically powdered insecticide, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, on the flea collar, yeah. And so it
was on your hands.
And on your hands all the time, yeah, and the odor is bad.
Right. So I think what I would say to Erin is this is an adventure,
something to be discussed with the veterinarian, yep. So that you can sort of, and keeping a journal on, you know, so you can really be specific. What is it that your dog's sensitive to? And
when and what's the weather? You know, is it cold? What all that stuff would be, as you say, really helpful in
right. And if you've got a dog who's super social and you want to maintain that great social life, then finding something that you can apply. So the Dr. Dobias, Dobias. If you Google that, you can find Tick Hex. It's TickHex, and that is a spray-on. You're supposed to be able to spray it on once a week. I've used it on my dogs. If we're going to go in the woods,
mm-hmm.
But I use it on top of NexGard. So, but I have had a couple of other people who use it and say that it works well. So you rub it all in and you leave it on for a week.
That sounds pretty good. All right, thank you, Tick Hex, and what a great name! Thank you so much, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerson Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millersonvet.com.